Hello and welcome to this episode of the Correspondent Podcast, the AI Gold Rush. I am Azola Loan, a fund manager at Coronation, and I'm joined by Dani Pretorius, an equity analyst on our global investment team.
Azola, nice to be here.
It's been 2 years since OpenAI's ChatGPT was launched, and since then, artificial intelligence and its impact on everything, from how we work to how we invest, it has been such a major topic. The spotlight, however, is often on big companies, such as NVIDIA and Microsoft. But like the gold rush of the 1800s, the companies that provide the proverbial picks and shovels, they also play a vital role in the industry. It's such a rich ecosystem with many different players. And that's what Dani's here to discuss today. Dani, let's start with a high-level overview. Can you talk us through the different parts of the AI ecosystem?
Yeah, Zola, sure. It's quite easy to get lost in a lot of the detail quite quickly. So I like to simplify it and think of it as kind of a three-layer cake. Where at the top layer, you've got the people building the models, software companies that are essentially building these large language models. These are companies that you've heard of like OpenAI, Anthropic, Google, Meta, and they build models with esoteric names like ChatGPT and GPT-4 and Llama. But essentially, these are software companies that specialize in building these big foundational models. And then on top of that, you have a bit of an ecosystem of smaller startups. They work at kind of customizing these models with their own data sets and so on, and building applications on top of these models. The next layer of this cake is what I call the infrastructure layer. One of the things that's very different about the AI revolution compared to previous tech cycles is just how capital intensive it is. You need a lot of infrastructure to train these models. So it's really very large companies that can afford to build out the data centers in order to train these models. So that's done by big companies like Microsoft and Meta that build these data centers for their own use, as well as cloud service providers. So Microsoft's Azure, Amazon Web Services, Google Cloud, that essentially build the data centers and lease it out to third parties. And then maybe the bottom layer of this cake is the actual hardware or technology that underpins it all. You can think of the semiconductor companies here that design the chips, the GPUs and other chips that are required in order to run these models. And you've mentioned NVIDIA earlier. They're the most prominent provider of GPUs and AI chips in the sector. But I would also include some of the hyperscalers, or the large tech companies that design their own chips, like Google and Amazon design their own chips here, and also include the manufacturers of these chips, foundry services like TSMC and the equipment providers to those foundry services like ASML.
Wow, it certainly is a vast and a dynamic field, but I'm really grateful, Dani, that you've actually broken it down into three main components or three layers. So there's a software layer where the models are developed. Then, of course, you spoke about the infrastructure aspects as well as the hardware providers. I think that's really useful in terms of sketching the scene for our listeners. So tell us, what do we need to know in terms of the latest technological advancements?
Well, maybe the first point I'll make is that AI is not entirely new. This is a field that's been around since the 1950s, really, when the first research papers were written. We've seen techniques like neural networks and machine learning being developed and deployed in the real world for a number of years now, very successfully. And a lot of what we see in AI today is really a continuation of that kind of innovation that's already been in place. The step change, though, has come through the generation of generative AI, where instead of just getting the model to process data, you're actually getting the models now to generate their own output. So like you say, this is a very fast-changing field, and it's hard to keep up. I mean, there's a constant flow of new product releases and new capabilities that come out almost on a daily basis. And you know, some of these are applications with real utility that's deployed in the real world already today. And you can think of things like code generation, helping me write software, you know, online advertising systems. I mean, these are real deployments. And some of the applications are probably a bit more in the R&D stage. But we're seeing this being deployed everywhere from medical imaging, self-driving cars, you know, chatbots and call centers, all those kinds of applications. Maybe for me, one of the more interesting areas of development right now is in a little bit of a bifurcation of what's happening in the inference stage. You know, you can think of training a model on the one side, when you're building the model, and then actually using the model to give you the output is what's called inference. And here there's different types of developments that are happening. You know, on the one side, a bit of a push towards smaller models that you can actually use on devices like your mobile phones. It requires far less sophisticated hardware. And on the other side, you know, one of the problems that the AI has had is a problem of so-called hallucination, where it comes up with, frankly, the wrong answers. And one of the ways to combat that is what's called enhanced reasoning capabilities at inference time, which is a, you know, fancy way of saying give the computer more time to think about the answer and come up with higher quality answers.
Wow, Danya, I think that's fascinating. I mean, enhanced reasoning capabilities. I mean, that is quite something. But I think just before we continue, you said something earlier that I found quite interesting. You spoke about GPU time on data centers. So what exactly is a GPU and why is it so important?
So a GPU is a graphics processing unit. And this is really the chip that makes it all possible. These are microprocessors that they've been specifically designed to do a very large volume of pretty simple calculations, but all at once, in parallel. So it can process vast amounts of data very quickly, which makes them very well suited for the kinds of calculations that are required in order to train an AI model.
Great. No, thanks for that. That helps a lot. So as with the gold rush, there were those who attained really great success and, of course, those who tried, you know, but weren't very successful. I think the tech industry is similar. You know, there's lots of companies pursuing lots of new developments and there's a great deal of competition. So, Danny, who do you believe stands the best chance in the long run? I mean, who do you think the future belongs to?
Well, that's the million-dollar question, isn't it? Look, I think long-term, AI is going to be absolutely transformative in virtually every field of life. It is going to be everywhere. But we also have to have some humility and say, you know, we don't know exactly how it's going to unfold. It's quickly evolving with lots of uncertainties. That said, the players that have done well so far have been big tech companies, you know, the hyperscalers, that have benefited from access to, firstly, deep talent pools of engineering talent, as well as capital. And, you know, frankly, I think those factors probably stay in place for quite a while. So I think we're likely to see the large hyperscalers like the Googles, like the Amazons, like the Microsofts play an important part in the ecosystem for some time. Because of the massive cost that's involved in building these data centers and training the models and the constraints that you have with things like access to data, I do think that we're likely to see a convergence of models. You'll have a few maybe foundational models like the GPT type of models, the Llama type of models, that end up being very capable, look fairly similar to one another, but then form the basis of innovation for third-party developers who bring their own data sets, their own applications that then sit on top of those types of models. And that's, I think, where the real innovation is still going to come in the future. On the hardware side, clearly, like I said, NVIDIA is dominant today. It's got the number one GPU in the market and has been really the driving force today. But I suspect that, you know, over time we are likely to see a little bit more of a proliferation in hardware as well based on the use case.
So, Dani, talk to us about where we actually have exposure. So we've spoken about, you know, the three layers, whether it's the software companies or the providers that are focusing on infrastructure or hardware. Where are we positioned?
Well, we do own shares in a few of the large tech companies that really straddle all three of those layers, you know, software, infrastructure, and hardware. So, for instance, own shares in Alphabet and Meta or Facebook, that they've built and deployed their own foundational large language models. They run their own data centers, you know, either for internal use or for, you know, third parties. And they also design their own chips. We also own Amazon, which has, you know, a very large cloud services business that provides access to GPUs to third parties, and they also do their own chip design as well. So they, you know, these tech companies straddle all three layers of the cake. And then specifically within that hardware layer, we do own shares of both TSMC and ASML.
So at Coronation, we are deliberate about integrating ESG matters into our investment process. So you've mentioned that we own some of the major cloud providers that run these large data centers. Of course, running these data centers for generative AI is exceptionally power intensive. So Goldman Sachs, they've estimated earlier this year that their global power demands will grow exceptionally by 2030. So some examples. They say that data centers in the US will consume 8% of total power by 2030. That is up from 3% power consumption in total in 2022. And if you contrast that with Europe, these data centers will need as much energy as Portugal, Greece, and the Netherlands combined by the end of the decade. What impact does this actually have on the investment case?
Zora, you're absolutely right. I mean, in aggregate, AI is significantly more energy intensive than conventional compute. I mean, that is absolute fact. The good news is that with each subsequent generation of processor, with each subsequent generation of GPU, the power consumption per unit of compute is falling. You know, the chips are becoming more power efficient. But of course, people are buying more chips and building bigger data centers. So in absolute terms, you are seeing this increase in electricity consumption from these data centers. And to be honest, it's one of the biggest constraints for the entire industry. You know, one of the big gating factors in being able to go and build a new data center anywhere in the world is access to electricity. So on this front, we've seen a lot of the hyperscalers, you know, in recent, you know, months, Amazon, Google, and Microsoft have all signed deals with utilities for access to nuclear power to be able to have, you know, a steady supply of green energy. This includes purpose-built small modular reactors, which is a bit of a catalyst for that industry as well. You know, as power consumption continues to rise, it's going to remain a talking point, I think, for the industry.
And Dani, you also mentioned that we have exposure to hardware providers like TSMC. Can you tell us why we own this particular company in our portfolios? And is there any political risk that might be associated with the company? How should we think about that?
Yeah, so TSMC, it's the Taiwan Semiconductor Manufacturing Company. It's the world's leading foundry, which is essentially a third-party factory for building microchips on behalf of designers like NVIDIA and anybody else. It's for all practical purposes the only company on this planet that has the capabilities to build these chips at the leading edge for cutting-edge applications like AI. So one of the things that we really like about TSMC is that independently of how the AI universe unfolds over time, we think TSMC is going to be a winner. So whether those chips are going to be designed by NVIDIA or by Google or AMD or anybody else, TSMC is going to make them. And whether or not inference happens in a big data center or on your mobile phone, where the chip's made by or designed by Apple or Qualcomm, TSMC is manufacturing that chip. So it's a business that we think, you know, we've got a very high degree of confidence in its ability to grow earnings, you know, mid to high teens for a number of years. It's tremendous kind of allocator of capital, delivers, you know, high return on capital invested in that business, and trades on a pretty inexpensive multiple, you know, less than 20 times multiple for that kind of growth. Azula, you mentioned political risk, and I think that is a fair comment. This is a company that is based in Taiwan, so there is some geopolitical noise clearly with Taiwan. Frankly, it's one of the reasons why we're able to invest in the share, you know, at attractive levels. What I will say is that they are working actively to mitigate a lot of that risk. New factories that are getting built in places like the U.S., where a lot of the output is already coming from. So over time, you're going to see more and more growth coming out of places with, frankly, less political risk over time.
Great. I think that's very useful to know. Donnie, you also mentioned a name that perhaps might be unfamiliar, ASML. What role does this company play in the AI hardware ecosystem, and why do we find it attractive?
Yeah, ASML is a Dutch company. It's the leading provider of what's called lithography tools. Lithography is a very important process step in the manufacturing of a semiconductor. You can think of it as the process of essentially printing the design of the chip onto the silicon wafer. Very similar to, analogous to printing a photograph, but you know, significantly more complex. They effectively have the monopoly on the leading edge tools that are required to do this at what is extremely small levels of tolerance. So if you are somebody like TSMC or Samsung or Intel and you want to keep shrinking the size of the transistors in your microchip in order to keep advancing, you have to buy these tools from ASML, irrespective of who the end designer of that chip is going to be. It's going to be made in a foundry that uses an ASML tool.
Thank you for that fascinating discussion, Dani. It's so easy to get overwhelmed by the complex AI ecosystem. But I think the way that you explained it today, just taking us through the three layers, it's been so helpful in really contextualizing the space. What's also refreshing is actually hearing about other players that should thrive independent of how the AI market evolves. Please stay tuned for our upcoming podcast, where we'll be sharing more of our investment insights.